Off the Ball, GAA.
His career has spanned such a long period of time, you know, 14 seasons. He was this unbelievable scorer. And then on Jim's team, and that period, he became this playmaker.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The good.
Is it acceptable to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
The bad.
I'm scratching my head. The performances was just lacked that intensity.
And the amber.
Off the Ball's performance rankings.
All right, so we'll start with Spain and the World Cup final. Spain are World Cup champions after a 1-0 extra time win over Argentina. Viewers last night were treated to the US national anthem by Jennifer Hudson, a pre-match song from Robbie Williams, Nicole Scherzinger and Laura Pausini, a speech from Tom Cruise, a halftime show of Madonna, The Muppets, Shakira, Justin Bieber and BTS. Oh, and also some sort of game in between. I'm not sure what it was. I think it's called football. Stars from The Odyssey were in attendance, but the real stars were FIFA's Louis Vuitton ambassadors who showcased their suitcase to the world with some sort of gold trophy in it. Much loved presidents Gianni Infantino and Donald Trump were right in amongst the fans, protected, of course, by a 10-foot tall bulletproof glass, you know. Much loved in amongst the people. But don't let the pageantry fool you. You know, there were real ordinary people in attendance, you know, especially those who paid £1 million for pitch side tickets. They were well worth the money, Colm. They got sun hats. So they were well worth the money. And they got to sit in a nice IKEA sofa. So fair play to them. Big day. Spain are the champions.
Yeah.
Spain have won it for football, if you ask many people. But I don't know. I thought Spain should get some criticism for that display as well. I thought they were pretty poor throughout the game.
Do you think so, yeah?
Yeah.
Disagree.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were clinical. You have to bear in mind how many games they've played. The energy levels required to do that in the final game, having played, how many games? 11?
Yeah, it was an extra game because of the round of 32, yeah.
Yeah.
It was 11, yeah.
So, like, what do you expect? What are we talking? What do we say? 720 passes to 350 passes completed?
By the end, towards the end of the game,
towards the end of the game. They conceded one goal, you know, in the whole tournament.
That's amazing part of it, right? But I think it was because, that's what you're saying the whole time, is that they kind of ultimately lack a bit of cutting edge. Like two of the three forwards didn't have spectacular tournaments like Lamine Yamal. You were still waiting from last night to get going. He showed the occasional glimpses. He was also dispossessed a fair few times. Alex Baena feels like he's doing a job on the left-hand side because Nico Williams isn't fit enough to start. And then Aratzabal, who we were waxing lyrical about, rightly so, all tournament. He's taken off after about an hour or so.
Yeah, he looked very off.
And the ball comes on. Yeah, but I think it's like, so, was it Spain had about 15 shots by the end? I think Emi Martinez made 10 saves. And he obviously kept Argentina in it with those saves. I don't think any of them were spectacular. A lot of the shots were straight at Martinez.
Yeah, but it was Argentina's defensive display, say, in both halves, cutting out a lot of the ball that, you know, the through ball for the likes of Yamal. I genuinely enjoyed the game because, you know, I like their style of football. I like that they hold on to the ball. I like that they move it quickly. I wouldn't be critical of them.
We have a new system here, Ender, right? The Gabs method for performance ranking. What is this?
So we've got, obviously we've got the good, which is the top of the table. We've got the average, which is previously the amber, let's say.
Okay.
We've got the bad, which is self-explanatory. And then we've got the S, which I'm explaining, can mean any number of adjectives to describe.
But not superb, you know, or stupendous.
None of those.
What's in your head for it now? What's your thought?
Could be shambolic.
Shambolic.
Nice. I like that, chat.
Could be.
And are any entries that fit in S this morning, would you label them as shambolic?
I do think there's going to be one team in particular.
Okay.
In that bottom tier.
I know we're talking about Spain right there, but just as the final overall, I don't know if you saw the stat, right? So I mentioned there at the top the 27 minutes of halftime.
Sure.
But we can get the in of itself. The ball was only in play in the first half of the game for 2 minutes longer than the entirety of the halftime interval. So the ball was in play in the first half of this World Cup final for just over 29 and a half minutes. And extra time was 29 or 27 and a quarter minutes was halftime. It wasn't great, lads.
Do we overrate finals in general, though?
Finals,
like,
are,
I can't remember too many good finals in
football. Didn't Spain win their last final 1-0 against Netherlands? Was that a cracker?
No, it was. That was probably the last poor one, I would say, though. Like, I mean, people were talking about this is like 1990, which is a historically bad match. Like, even Diego Maradona documentary, like, he plays in that 1995. They just skip over it. It's one of the worst games ever because nothing happened in it. I see there's something about a sunshine afternoon kickoff in a World Cup final just doesn't feel right. There was a big pre-season friendly vibes off. A World Cup final has to be at nighttime. The temperatures have to drop. The floodlights need to be on. But this is like scorching sunshine. It didn't feel right. They were lifting the trophy in sunshine. Whatever about the game started.
Yeah, the penalties would have been in sunshine.
So like Roberto Baggio misses the penalty in 1994 in the blistering sun on the west coast of America. 98, I think, started with a bit of sun, but it was evening sun. France, Brazil. And I think then you go 02, 6, 10, 14, 18, 22. They're all nighttime. I think the game was affected by it. It was also impacted by the way that Argentina decided how to play or not play. Because when they play, they're actually good.
And there was a zip in the last 5-6 minutes of injury or extra time where they went at them and you were going, okay, we see something about them again. Like, they're aggressive. Like, they weren't lacking for passion and their fans were loud. Like, there was lots of elements to it. Just not the football.
Mm. Well, it's funny because Matthew said after the England game that we were a little bit too gleeful about Argentina's performance, that we wouldn't be as happy to watch that against a team that wasn't England. And I slightly disagree to him. I think he's coming out on top of that debate for now. But I do think Argentina looked at
he's
that.
Won the battle.
Argentina looked at that performance against England. And for some reason, instead of deciding the attacking front-footed football that ultimately won us this game and dominated England for so long in the second half, that wasn't the good part of that game. The aggression was the good part of that game. And they translated that over to Spain. Whereas even like Lautaro Martinez doesn't come off the bench. Maybe that's because Enzo Martinez gets the most brain-dead yellow red card you're going to see in a World Cup final. But he gives Argentina so much energy up front in the press and allows them to
Simeone
play two people
up front.
Simeone
did really well when he came on. He threw himself about, He had a great chance if he'd kept, like, I thought he actually had the best, he was the best of the Argentinians in the last 40 minutes.
That's because of the way they set up, because he's just all legs. He'll just run all day for you, in fairness.
But he's an absolute garbage footballer.
Yeah, he's not going to get a goal for you,
You know, like, Martinez at least has a goal in him. Or has movement in him and sets up Messi to play in a different role, whereas Simeone doesn't really do that, you know?
Well, yesterday he looked the most exciting of them for 40 minutes. I don't know what that says. Yeah. And Messi, that's potentially his last game, or it is his last game for Argentina. And do you think he was involved enough yesterday?
Yeah, but you come to expect it. Did you see when Spain went one up and the camera panned to him and he looked, was like, I have to start working now. And he did. I mean, he did us the thing about Messi, like, for the last 5 minutes of that match, he was starting to puncture. Yeah, that's what you get from it. I'll give you 5 minutes. And it's always really effective. So, like, he was having some killer passes.
I know, and he zipped in the two corners.
The pass down the line to Simeone, who smacks it across the box. That was excellent. You know, that's what he does still. There's loads of comments coming in here, mostly about actually the quality of the showing as well. And somebody also wants to talk about Tom Cruise's speech.
Did anybody think he was going to sing?
I thought he was going to do something.
I thought he was going to sing.
I thought he was going to start crying.
He could have done with a haircut.
He didn't. He didn't
the little bit of hair that was sticking up was driving
me nuts. He didn't take into account
nuts.
The wind factor.
And also, like, why was he holding his... Was he told to take off his sunglasses?
Why
were they dangling
there? Stick
them on your top or something. Like.
It was the pang of a guy who got to ask, fuck, would you fill in here for 5 minutes? Madonna's not here. She pre-wrecked her piece. I thought she was going to be here. She wasn't. Yeah, there was a surreal atmosphere because they had the announcement beforehand as well. Let's get ready to rumble and all that. They tried their best to American it.
To be fair, both buffers were there. Michael and Bruce. That's a rare sight.
There was no buffering there. Like, that was good. That was good stuff.
It went downhill from there,
like,
though, unfortunately.
I was saying to who I was watching it with the halftime, I was like, how much will this impact the players? Because they've never had a halftime length like this. None of them.
Yeah.
Never had a half an hour off.
27 minutes.
Those 3 minutes
make a difference. That has to make a difference.
The second half was just resembled what we saw in the first half for ages. In fact, I thought the first 10 minutes of the second half of normal time were particularly poor.
Actually, do you know what? The game was so bad that I didn't mind the rest of the pageantry around it. livened it up a bit.
But the boys on ITV reckoned they were sitting on bikes in the dressing rooms to keep themselves
moving.
Must have
done. It was, yeah. Do you know what reminded me of the Lions tour last summer in Australia?
The Lightning.
When that was, in fairness, nothing that they can do about that. But remember the camera was showing the Lions players on their phones, lying on beanies. What do you watch the show?
It was like 45 minutes.
I grieved as everyone else by Justin Bieber's performance with his out of tune guitar.
I actually thought the first, I hate to call it the first quarter, but the first quarter before the first hydration break was actually quite good.
The first 5 minutes it was actually quite lively, but then the hydration break
just took the sting out of it.
Danny Olmo, I thought, was very influential. I was kind of surprised he got taken off. I thought he was quite good. Fergus Keogh's been in touch. That was a grand halftime show. Just the right length for a shave and a shower. Peter says Ronaldo Ronaldinho looked like that time in The Simpsons when Smithers wheeled out Tom Jones at gunpoint. Just smile and wave. My thoughts exactly. We better allocate colours here, Ender, shouldn't we?
Yeah, so we're going to be putting Spain are the inaugural winners here. They go into the good.
The first gap.
Even though I think they played pretty badly overall.
Do you know, sorry, there's an S of Shambolic. Is there more than good? You know,
well, we might add in a little. Well, you could
extra. Edit it to great if you want.
It's great.
I don't think it deserves a great because they weren't great. But they are World Cup champions.
They're the worthy champs.
Yeah, worthy champions. I think. Yeah. Did they concede a goal?
One goal. Belgium.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. Incredible. That was an equaliser, so they weren't behind.
Like against that France attack, to not concede a goal.
Yeah. Like in an era of individuals, this is won by a team.
Yeah. Great.
So, did you see the awards were dished out at the end? Looked like they were genuinely surprised that it was like, you know, they caught them on the side. Like, Pau Cabarsi, who I would say, like, up until kickoff, nobody was really talking about. He was just part of a really good defence and then had a really good final. People talk about this with All-Stars as well in GAA. Yeah. It was like, if you have a good final, it's game changer. He was excellent, but he was part of this brilliant Spanish defence, so it was a worthy recipient of the award.
We'll have this conversation now over the next week or so, but Ballon d'Or. There's no obvious candidate.
No, there hasn't been for a while.
Yamal, if he had played well, you're like, it's going to be Yamal.
Like,
but he hadn't played well all tournament, so QRC.
Like the reigning Ballon d'Or holder, like, was probably like the 17th best player on the pitch in the France-Spain game. You know, it didn't stand out at all. So Rodri got player of the tournament. Rodri's having like unbelievable comeback considering the seriousness of his injury and how kind of okay he was for Manchester City all last season. Pep Guardiola did warn about this. He said, wait till the World Cup. You'll see him then at the World Cup, and he did. And he got taken off in this match, but he was still influential. Cabarsi with the young player, and Unai Simon with the goalkeeper award. Simon's ability to come off the line is because he does like 50 yards up the pitch for clearances.
The new Manuel Neuer?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
This was the Messi one at the start, was it?
Yes, this was Messi putting through, being put through actually. Kind of slightly pulled out actually.
He was going to pull out. It was a minute in, let's come on.
He's the most excused player in history, isn't he? Yeah. It's like everyone makes an excuse for Messi.
Gets away with
everything. He does. I didn't like that whole teacher. Cucurella just said to me. Yeah.
And it was only a split second.
It was.
I thought Martinez was class as well as
the
Emmy.
I thought some of his saves were on the dodgy variety where he spilled them and they went for a corner, but they all count as saves. Obviously he kept them in the game.
Last World Cup, I thought he was a bit immature.
From the way he got the award.
This World Cup, he seems to have grown into his role and much more of a leader and, you know, much more mature. So
let's see Spain officially here on the graphic in the new Gabs method. There you go.
There they are.
In G.
And we'll polish this off the World Cup final. The inaugural shambolic or shit or whatever you want to.
Would you put it there?
S letter. I'm going to put Argentina.
I think it's fair enough.
It was dreadful, dreadful, absolutely horrendous performance in a World Cup final. And I would say, just to finish off on Argentina, Zinedine Zidane's red card in the World Cup final, Enzo Maresca's World Cup red card was more brain dead than Zidane's. Who did I say?
Maresca.
That'd be mad. Enzo's red card. What do you think? There's 2 minutes left in extra time. There's no need to go into, like, honest to God, give your head a shake. What are you thinking? It was the most idiotic red card you're likely to see at the top level.
I guess by the tone of the room here that nobody here wanted to go to penalties and for Argentina to win because it would just be
Do you know what? I actually wanted penalties so that everyone was justified staying up to watch that.
I didn't want Argentina to get the opportunity to win that game.
Right.
But I wouldn't mind seeing penalties as long as Spain won.
Yeah. 117th minute was Argentina's first shot. They never had one on target. Unai Simon had no save to make.
Dreadful.
On a day he gets goalkeeper of the tournament. He was still a good goalkeeper.
So that's the World Cup final. I think the World Cup final is probably in the bin as well.
In the bin?
In B.
Overall.
B, but not S.
Yeah.
I would put B. I mean, it was because the World Cup final was going to be minimum B for me all the time, just because it's the World Cup final.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, there was absolutely no, obviously not going to bed, like, you know, like if this was a standard match, you would have long gone to bed. But it's the World Cup final, you want to see what happens.
Perhaps nodded off.
Yeah.
In the 68th minute
walk. You know, this is the whole, like, how often do you pick up the phone test? There was a lot of that going on last
night. Yeah.
It was dire at times. But extra time livened up. As soon as Spain went one up, I was just calling. I was like, if Spain score early, this would be a great final. Because Argentina then would have to park the shithousery.
Yeah.
They'll just have to start playing ball. And they can play. As we saw against England when they went one down. Yeah. They can really play. And we saw it again for a tiny bit last night.
You're talking 4 minutes where I would say if they
had 10 more minutes, they probably could have equalised. But they ran out of time. They had too much to do. They can't keep going to the well repeatedly, Argentina.
Do you remember the ball across the square? It was made up. Who couldn't get there? It was in the last 2 minutes.
Yeah, that was the one where Messi was quite influential again with the true ball. Yeah, that was a big one.
So who cleared it? Was it...
I'd say probably by position alone, it'd be either Cubarsí or Laporte.
I think it might have been Cubarsí.
Yeah.
If he was still on the pitch.
And then Simeone, of course, has the big chance as well, which he swipes.
I thought it was interesting when Spain did score, Scaloni's reaction. He was just sat down and put his head down in his knees. Like, it was like, okay. Even he doesn't believe they can come back here.
He doesn't appear like an aggressive character to me, and his team is really aggressive.
Yeah.
Is he quite a controlled figure?
That's a good figure? Point, yeah.
Like,
I don't know.
How can you stand over that level of aggression if you're not personally that aggressive?
Yeah, that's a good point. He is kind of like, he's emotional, but he's not aggressive, you're right. You don't see him going at the Ford official too much, but I don't know.
Measured, like he's quite a measured man, and then his team is chaotic.
I actually don't, I think, there's an element of they're giving them the license to play like that, but I think a few of them have a streak in them that they're just like that. Like Paredes is just like that.
Yeah.
Like, and Simeone's like that.
You made the point there.
Martinez and Romero are the same as well in the centre-backs.
Before the game, or before the show this morning, about Gavi. Poor old Gavi, like, doesn't go on the pitch. Unused substitute. His country just won the World Cup. Gets his World Cup winner's medal. And the first thing he has to deal with is Paredes leaning over him.
That's
UFC style.
His abiding memory from that game.
It's brutal, isn't it?
Flung to the ground.
He goes to finish him.
It's tough. Paredes. He does, yeah. Mm. Ah, he's nasty. He's a nasty player.
As well. It was all in one goal. No.
So it was the first nil-all World Cup final after normal time since 1994. And I had the record at halftime actually for the fewest amount of shots since 1966. So this was, you were in the drudgery here, and it was still you were waiting for this thing to get going.
Yeah.
But Luis de la Fuente, what a manager. Spain unbeaten since March 2023.
Yamal's never been beaten in a Spain jersey, right?
You'd probably be about right there, yeah.
There's a few of them there, I think.
Fabian Ruiz.
Yeah.
Fabian Ruiz, yeah, has that stat. He got taken off early enough as well. Yeah, you're probably right there.
Yeah.
How about Trump at the end, huh?
Oh, God.
How about Donald Trump?
He was lingering.
I mean, was anyone expecting anything different when they were both walking up with the trophy? I was trying to think of previous World Cup finals. Does the president of the host nation go up with the FIFA president?
No.
So, well, in Qatar, Messi was presented.
Yeah.
He was special. Cloaked.
Yeah, was cloaked.
Was
yeah.
He was cloaked.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, somewhat of his will, like you're going to have to
do this.
He
just gave him the trophy and he was able to was do it his
but
way.
But I don't think I've ever seen the president of the host country walk up with the FIFA president and stay there.
It was embarrassing. I was surprised he didn't stay in the middle of it like he did the Club World Cup.
It was that moment where, Infantino probably hopes that they're maybe himself and Trump are genuine friends. And then he realised in this trophy ceremony, he's like, oh, this guy's not my friend at all. When he runs over, he says, please get off the stage. And Trump shrugged his shoulders because he wants that photo op.
Do you think Trump will ghost him after the World Cup? We won't hear from him again.
He's got other things on, lads.
Yeah. Yeah. So he wants to host it again immediately.
Yeah, I saw that. So the next available World Cup is Saudi Arabia 2034. Yeah. And then it goes around Europe in 2030. So 2038. Trump will be about 92.
He's not still going to be president.
I don't know, he doesn't drink, sir. That's the problem. This guy could, not drinking is a big thing.
That's true. Shall we move on? All right, so we'll...
Where are we putting that World Cup final? B.
B, yeah.
B. Okay.
Yeah. Some people in the comments are saying that S should be above A. So if they could explain what they mean by that.
I hate to do this to you, Enda, but in these tier rankings online, in the culture of them, S tier is always at the top. I don't know if it's, I don't think it's super, but
we're going off like
the S tier is like a phrase in itself.
What S stands for.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Is my
bending the rules.
All right, so we'll move on to the Hurling. Limerick are All-Ireland Hurling champions for the first time since, it's 2 years' time?
2023.
After a 129-118 win over Galway and Croke Park yesterday. The win on Sunday brings John Kiley's record to 6 All-Ireland titles, 7 Munster titles and 4 league titles in 9 years. And a phenomenal win for Limerick overall against Galway. A disappointing Hurling final altogether. Rachel Sheehan should be on the line with us now. From the Burlington. Rachel, good morning.
Morning, folks. How are you?
What'd you make of that, Rachel?
Ah, well, I suppose, look, come better than last year for myself, yourself, and good morning, Sarah. How are you? Speaking of the unfortunate club that we're all in, how are you?
All good. Is there anyone awake yet?
There's about 40 or 50 people here, but I think they're all tourists waiting to get on a bus. So I asked them about the game, but their insights weren't too helpful, unfortunately. I've been here since about 7 o'clock this morning. It was a bit of a ghost town. Couple of TV cameras rolling up, but no signs of life from either coaching staff or players just yet. You'll see me, looking up at the corner of my eye every time I see a little bit of movement. But the Limerick bus with the All-Ireland Champions 2026 was lined up outside this morning. I'd say getting all the gear on board ahead of the fantastic trip back down south. But no signs, just people heading off for a nice day around the Cliffs of Moher, I'd say. They're probably in for a shock. I can see them looking around at all of the TV cameras and the people being like, am I about to be interviewed about my trip in the Wild Atlantic Way? I'm not so sure. But I'm excited. Hopefully we'll catch a couple of the players, maybe some management. I know they are, as is tradition, heading out to Crumlin. So we'll grab them on their way out for sure. Or on their way back in. Who knows?
Listen, great to have some Cork representation in the winning team hotel anyway this morning. While you wait there for the players to emerge, I take it to Micheál Donoghue's post-match comments, Rachel. Said, in summary, lucky to be just 5 points down at half-time, and he was hoping for that big second-half performance. The last time this game was level was about a quarter of an hour in. It was 3 points apiece. It was surprisingly low scoring, actually, for a good portion of this match. And after that, Donoghue kind of said, well, Limerick just grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck. In that first quarter of an hour, they were okay, but they were trying to force it too much. And it was kind of a good way to describe it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, anyone that was watching in those first even 5, 6, 7 minutes when you had those couple of goal chances, I think it was evident enough from Eric Land's first touch and his first score. For me, I was like, they're on today. Galway are in trouble when he's firing like that. If he gets his first touch going, he was maybe one that there was the biggest question mark over on the Limerick side. And he's operating, you just know they're in for a day of it. Early days, I was sitting beside a couple of Galway fans to my left and Limerick fans to my front. And you could see straight away they knew the Limerick side were after settling in. And yeah, they hunted the goals early, and so unusual for them not to convert them. But you never got the sense of, oh, they've had their couple of goal chances now and they'll rue them. It was just a matter of when they were going to create the next couple. And the scoreboard, I kept checking it a couple of times because it just felt like Limerick were so on top. They were dominating. It wasn't really reflected on the scoreboard, but I think everyone at halftime knew that Galway were maybe very lucky to be going in just 5 points down, and certainly felt like that in the grounds as well.
I was interested in like the online discourse after full-time, Sarah, and this one, a lot of people saying like that's the worst All-Ireland Hurling final I've seen since 2008, where you saw Kilkenny's demolition of Waterford that day. Now, Limerick themselves kind of handily beat Waterford and Cork in 2020 and 21 back-to-back, but people thought this was actually worse again. I was kind of hoping and praying like the rest of us neutrals that like, can Galway make a game of this? Darren Neary had a chance. Do you remember that he was going, bearing down and going the right-hand side? It was a half chance, but it got blocked. And then Cathal Mannion, I think he got his first score after about 50 minutes. I mean, outside of Aaron Nyland, there was no one scoring here for half an hour for Galway. It was mad. That chance for Mannion, he gets that point. You could hear the Galway crowd then getting into it a little bit. There was exactly 20 minutes left in the match and Limerick, I think, were 8 points ahead. There was a split second, but Limerick immediately responded with a point of their own.
And that's the difference between the great teams and the good teams. Mm. They kept the scoreboard ticking over, and it was Mannion had a wide and Cathal O'Neill pins the ball over the bar straight after just to reinforce the point. They were outscored 123 to 8 points technically from play, which, you know, over the course of the game is an incredible stat. But commentary team described Croke Park as a library, which isn't a great. Yeah,
like I was going to ask you about that, Sarah, the atmosphere there. Yeah. Or, sorry, Rachel.
Yeah, that moment when Colin Mannion put that ball over the bar from the far sideline where I was sitting, there was life. There was life in Galway. Like, you could hear them, and you're looking at it saying, God, there is still 20 minutes left. And I suppose coming from the game last year with Cork, not scoring, Tom Monaghan did get that settler for them in the first half. I think it might have been on about 40, 41 minutes. So it's like, right, they have points on board. I know they weren't attacking that much, but they weren't forcing the goal that early. The fact that Tom and Cahill put those points over the bar, and you just said, if they can get another point or two now and just question this Limerick side, you always thought in the back of your mind that they were going to have the answers anyway. But even if they were just to put it up to them, and like you said, Cahill O'Neill gets the ball, puts it over the bar, and it was nice, I suppose, for the Limerick side just to be able to see them. I mean, like that final Cian Lynch score, you could tell he's capable of doing that every game if it's the first or the 70th minute, but he doesn't because he's always looking for the man in the better place. But you could just see him take a little bit of a think and say, this now, I'm going to put this over the bar because this game is home and hosed, and he enjoyed it so much and the crowd enjoyed it so much. And like, in fairness to the Galway supporters, like, there was a pocket of young fellas and girls up on the hill at the start when Jason Rabbit was getting fouled for every ball, and they were, the chance for J.O. was going, and it was really, really good. It was very exciting, like, because I suppose Galway did get off to a good start, but after, you know, after 40, 45 minutes, you're thinking, this is kind of looking like damage control now. And I'd say that Darren Eyre chance surely has to be point of the year. I know it didn't amount to a goal, but the afterburners he put on at that stage of the game and to control the ball, it was probably the first and last time any Galway player got through a couple of Limerick bodies. So they didn't let it happen again.
I'm going to give my score of the Galway team to Rabbit, where he... His first score was insane. And I was going, if this young fella can carry Galway through like that with three players hanging off the back of him and gets away from Sean Finn out in the sideline.
I like the Aaron Galland showboating point at the end.
Yeah.
Where the solo win was actually, it was almost soccer style the way he was keeping it up, and the anger.
That's just a tease.
That goes to show the skill levels of these lads when they...
Nah, I'm giving it to Rabbit. He was full flight. He wrestled through three players and put it over. So that's where I'm going with that one. But that was one of the few highlights, as you said, and Neary's point was incredible as well. And credit to Nyland, like, he had seven scores on the board. Only Nyland and Rabbit had scored in the first half. Whelan was non-existent, not enough from, say, the more experienced Galway players. To be relying on a 19-year-old to get you into a game is, I suppose, why it didn't go Galway's way yesterday.
All right, Rachel, we'll let you scour the Burlington Hotel. We'll be back with you throughout the show.
Do you need room numbers? Will we do some texting in the background?
I think so. I'm gonna up my loitering level now to 100. Come, so we'll see. We'll snuff someone out. I've got Jonathan Higgins here, a very able man. So we might cover front door and back door just in case anyone's thinking of sneaking away from us. Hopefully, we'll chat to you soon.
Loiter with intent, Rachel. Go on. What are we allocating here to this All Ireland hurling final?
I thought it was an overall pretty dreadful All-Ireland final.
You know, I'm surprised you said that word, because I thought your tone was going to be actually all right.
No, it was...
That's just a bit hyperbolic.
Do you know what?
No?
It didn't get going. For an All-Ireland hurling final, that could have easily been, you know, a quarter-final in All-Ireland football terms. Like, it was a team that was clearly dominant, a team that's clearly common, but just not good enough at this stage. It wasn't tit for tat at any stage past the 20th minute. Limerick just dominated. Galway gave the ball away. You know, like, it didn't have the feel of an All Ireland final.
That was a masterclass.
It was, yeah. But
I'm not saying Limerick were bad. I'm saying the match was bad.
They certainly weren't.
I'm saying the match was bad.
But what I'm saying to you is, it was the first time all year that Limerick have dominated. Like, Munster final, it went down to the wire. Mm. They won it by a point. Semi final against Clare, they got out by the skin of their teeth. So to see them bring this performance in a final on the biggest day has to give the team merit, because they've pulled it all together in, you know, an incredible 70 minutes. And I'm going to say it, I've fallen back in love with Limerick hurling.
Wow. When did you fall out of love with it?
2023, when I was sick of the tackling and the slow hand passing and right. the throwing, and they fixed it all.
Well, Gareth Hegarty said that they probably fell into the trap of taking for granted their Croke Park
that was really
appearances
yeah.
at the end of 23.
That was a level of honesty that was really endearing yeah. because we would have spoken the last 2 years about them not being at it.
Yeah.
And they certainly were at it yesterday.
Well, while Rachel loiters in the background yes. waiting to find some Limerick players, should we take some Limerick camp from yesterday?
Yeah, for sure.
Tommy Rooney caught up with Mike Casey and with Mike Casey and Sean Finn after the game. They were hopping onto the bus. The bus driver was literally beeping at them to come onto the bus at this stage. And here's what they had to say about their win.
We've had dark days over the last 2 years, you know, and that's definitely a driving factor, you know. A lot of us weren't in the country when, you know, the last two All-Ireland finals were on, and, you know, we were together in a group for a little holiday, maybe 15 or 20 of us, and it was tough. You know, it really was tough because you think you can get back there, you know, and it's sweet then when you do get back and put it in a performance like that and get the reward for all the hard work throughout the year, you know.
Sean, the forward, right, they'll always get maybe Man of the Match awards and maybe Hurlers of the Year and credit like that, often, usually that. But, like, as a group today, as a team, like, you were awesome. The turnovers, the tackling. Tommy Walsh turned to me on commentary, a man who knows about winning All-Irelands and All-Stars, and he just said, "Jesus, the tackling today is what he loves to see." The ferocity of it was unreal.
Yeah, look, we have a lot to thank the forwards for, in fairness, because a lot of the effort comes from the front eight, and when we get that effort and work rate, it makes our job a lot easier. But I suppose the sweetest thing of it all is that we see how training has been going for the last probably 2 weeks, but certainly probably for the last 4 months, and then just to get that performance on the big day is probably the sweetest of all, you know. The biggest worry is that you see how well things are going in the group, to group and as united now as ever before, and the worry is that you don't get that performance on the day and then you leave it behind you, but just to get it today was incredible.
You boys started together in 18, am I right in saying that? Have I got my maths wrong?
It's a long time ago. 17 since there, is, yeah, it's a lot, yeah. Back to minor, 2013, 14 even, like, yeah. Wow.
It's
yeah.
some journey, boys, isn't it?
It's unbelievable, yeah. You know, and we're going to be around for a bit longer. We're going to be around for a bit longer now. Yeah, so it's been some journey. We've made some memories. And, you know, like, it's the memories you go for. Do you know, like, all the medals and stuff, they'll collect us there at home, and the mother and father will be looking after them and all that sort of thing. But through the memories we've created over the years, the memories we're going to create over the next 4 or 5 days, and, like, that's what we're going to sit in a bar stool in 20 years' time and look back on, like, you know.
Magic. Mike Casey, Sean Finn. Well done, boys.
Thank you. Boys.
Yeah, Sean Finn, Mike Casey speaking with Tommy there after Limerick win the All-Ireland again.
You're looking at me.
You have an issue here.
And it described the final as dreadful. I think as a contest, it wasn't great. Limerick were clearly a much better team than Galway on the day. But I think that was down to Limerick.
Agreed.
And, like, a good example of that is, you know, Kylie making the decision to take Casey off Rabbit. Like, if you have left him on, maybe the game's a bit closer in that first half. But the adjustment in game is a testament to that setup and how good they are. And then to do a great job on Rabbit, even though he had his moments at times. But there's some great scores. Like, we were talking about Adam English there a minute ago. Like, he was amazing. Keane Lynch started the game. Like, by all accounts, hasn't been fully fit throughout the championship. Had a great game.
Their partnership was insane. That was my favourite part of the whole game. I thought they did so much.
Yeah, and Grote Hegarty, for me, hurler of the year off the back of that performance. I know he didn't even score.
He's not scoring, you know. That still doesn't matter.
Final leader,
not scoring,
like,
but his influence
does not matter.
Is Messi-esque at times.
I suppose the question I would pose about the final is that the football has overtaken the hurling in terms of entertainment value this year. Mm-hmm. And there has been a lot of complaining about how good or bad the hurling has been so far this season. Like, as an advertisement for the game of hurling, if you were to say, right, this is a showpiece event, let's give us something, it was a letdown.
It was, yeah. It definitely was.
That's where I'm not taking away from Limerick's performance. They were phenomenal. Galway didn't get going. The match wasn't great, and it wasn't the best showcase for what we have come to see as the All-Ireland hurling final.
But the condensed season means that we had an absolute battle 2 weeks ago between Clare and Limerick that we're still not over. Mm. And Clare probably still aren't over it. So is it the fault of the condensed season that we're expecting these rip-roaring games to happen week on week on week when we're not giving the players the chance to even recover from the games that they're playing in?
Yeah.
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 Like, Now, this Galway team will come back again, I imagine. Like, there's so many young lads in there. Derek Faye, I thought, was really good in the first half as well. Probably kept them in it.
Well, that save on Hegarty.
Two saves on Hegarty.
Fantastic. Yeah, two of them. Yeah,
in the first 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the fullback. Joshua Ryan. I noticed in the match before the game that he was smiling to the crowd. And I thought, that can go one or two ways. This is a young fella really enjoying his first appearance in All-Ireland final, or he's ready for this and they're going to win this final. Obviously went one way. But like the experience that they'll get from that, I think
there is
more to that game.
He wins the penalty. Literally going for 70 minutes.
The nerve of me to say this, right? But does hurling need an All-Ireland final between Limerick and Cork? Because, you know, Cork beat Limerick in the championship this year.
Colin, I'm going to be really straight with you.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have lived with Limerick yesterday.
Maybe not, right?
But because we are injured, we are without cover, and Limerick, Kylie referenced it yesterday, every single one of their players was back to full health.
Yeah.
And it is the first time in 5 years that they've had every player available to them, and we did not.
I think you're right. I think no matter who Limerick played yesterday, but I'm just talking about overall. I think the nerve of me again, like, you know, like this is back-to-back hammerings in All-Ireland finals now, the last of which was Cork were the problem, right, against Tipperary. Mm-hmm. And Cork had hammered against Galway. So Galway obviously earned their place, right? But last year, it was like Dublin beating Limerick was great on the day, but a waste of time overall. Because Cork then hammered Dublin in the semi-final. And then Galway hammer Cork out the gap in the second half of the semi-final, particularly. Hammer them. And then you saw that final yesterday. And I know what you're all saying out there. I'm just saying, Cork are the only team to beat Limerick in the championship this year. I'd love to see a Cork-Limerick All-Ireland final in this era. The last time we saw that would have been 2021.
And we were
when
bet
Cork
out
were
the
proper
gate.
Boys then.
We were bet out the gate and the game was over after five minutes.
Could get hammered again.
The game was over after 5 minutes in 2021. Galway took it to halftime at least. No, I'm sorry. We weren't ready and we're back in the pack.
So it's Limerick and the rest?
We're back in the pack.
Okay.
All right, so
we'll chat about this again properly later in the show.
We definitely will.
More questions for you, Sarah.
Yeah. Limerick go into the good.
Yeah. Do you have the final in there generally?
Good.
What's thought? That's as far as we can go.
That's as good as.
I think we'll call that great.
We have to call it great. We can always debate whether the G is good or the G is great.
Okay. Right, there's shades of it. Okay.
They're top of the list.
50 shades of grey.
Top of the list. All right. For Galway, it's another final, another defeat. Their record in All-Ireland finals.
Word it like that. Like, that's their first final in 9 years. It's not like they're getting to the final.
Their record in All-Ireland finals, if you would let me finish, now stands at just 5 wins from 26. So yeah, it is another final, another defeat.
No, you are right. Galway. You're spot on.
They will be disappointed with their performance, particularly their handling the ball in possession. Limerick turned them over 41 times in that game.
That's an incredible stat.
That's as much as down to Limerick's work rate as it is down to Galway, to be fair to them. Micheál Donoghue was speaking in the press after the game. We should take a little bit of that. He's speaking here to the media in the press room and basically just disappointed in coming up short, but gives Limerick a lot of credit too.
First and foremost, you have to give them huge credit for their performance and their consistency of the performance over the 70 minutes. Like, yeah, I think, you know, we're 5 down and at that stage probably would have taken that, do you know what I mean? Hoping that we would have put in a bigger second half. And I suppose when you reflect on Limerick and the season they had up to today, you know, we were measuring it against lesser performances, if you want to put it that way, because, you know, full credit to them on the biggest day. They probably gave the best performance in a long time, and I said full credit to John, his management team, and all of them.
He caused them a bit of bother early doors. Jason Rabbit had clocked up 3 fouls and got Mike Casey on a yellow card after 10 minutes. I think that was the last time we were level, though, at 3 apiece. What did you get right early on, and what maybe went wrong then across first half?
I think, for the first quarter, I thought we were okay, but I think we were forcing it a bit and just not playing our game as much. But I think you still have to give full credit to them that they nullified it. Like, they closed us down, and the amount of turnovers they had obviously gave them a massive platform. So, look, obviously it's bitter today, and it's going to hurt for a few days. And it's, you know, I've said over the last number of weeks, like, that the younger fellas in particular have to. It was important to be exposed to big games and meaningful games. Today was, someone used the phrase there, they learned in the fire today. Do you know what I mean? It's a tough one to take. And we'll just soak it up and have to go again.
Yeah, Micheál Donoghue there, Galway boss, afterwards yesterday. Pretty honest. Felt like that was a year premature for Galway. That they've had a remarkable 2026, but the final probably came too soon. And the only worry I'd have for this coming Sunday's All-Ireland football final, would it be the same story of Mayo? That this is quite sudden they've got to the final under Andy Moran.
So, to my mind, this will galvanise Kerry. Because Kerry will say, we are the same as Limerick. You know, we're at that level, performance level. Mm. We need to show that same level of focus, dynamism, calm, and we will close this team out. You know, that's, I think that does more for Kerry, that win, than it will for anyone else.
Yeah. A lot of parallels can be drawn between them, like Kerry, a big team, like physical, yeah. Mayo, like you said, young.
And reliant on their inside line.
Yeah, 100%.
So if you cut out that inside line, which is essentially what Limerick did to Galway, then I think Kerry and Mayo could be 10 points, 12 points.
8:16 a.m. and it's very special off the ball breakfast this Monday morning. So, tied 26th in 2023 at the Masters, tied 23rd in the same year at the PGA Championship, tied 19th in 2025 at the US Open, and tied 16th in 2019 at the Open. On the 18th green, I looked at Ryan Fox's major record to date. And then he goes and does that in the call. Have you seen three better shots?
Phenomenal stuff from
off
Ryan
the tee,
Fox.
The iron and the putt. He took 22 seconds to putt after his playing partner Sam Burns took the ball out of the cup.
He did. He's a fast player in general,
yeah.
Is Ryan Fox, when he became the third Kiwi to win a major in men's golf. There also is a mm-hmm. major winner in women's golf. His 18th hole birdie took his tally to 10 under par, one shot ahead of US player Cameron Young on 9 under. Young had a storming round as well, 64 on his final day to set up a potential playoff. But as you said, Fox finished with a phenomenal birdie on the 18th to bring his tally to 10 under and win the Open. He is a fast player. He did say after it that he was playing with Scotty Scheffler one other round, and Scotty said to him that he didn't feel like he was part of the group because he was hitting his ball so quickly and he didn't know whether to take that as a compliment or an insult. But he played golf the way it should be played in that final round. He was brave when he needed to be brave. He pushed when he needed to push, and he was also smart when he needed to be smart. He went into the bunker on 17 and he went into the bunker on 16 and he took his punishment, just chipped out onto the fairway and got in for his bogey. Then he went into the bunker again and in the 17th and he didn't play smart. He knew he had to press, knew he had to get the birdie, and he went on and he did what he did. So, like, out of all the winners, potential winners from the weekend, I think he was probably the one that is the most interesting and most exciting and did what he needed to do. Siwoo Kim was very close at times. Sam Burns completely bottled it early on in the front nine, but then somehow clawed it back, but just couldn't get his confidence back to where it needed to be to make a shot when it really counted. So that's a couple of times Burns has done that.
Yeah.
He'll get over that at some stage. Could be like Cam Young. I think Cam Young probably deserved a playoff based on his round, but look, you have to put it together across the weekend, not just on your final round. So we got a deserving winner in Birkdale.
Fox hits a 62 the previous day, right? And then comes back out.
Yeah, that's it.
And the mental resilience to say...
I mean, Ryan Fox could have created history on Saturday evening. So he had a putt to shoot a 61, which would have been the first in Open Championship history. And he came about 5 foot short. But funnily enough, he was the third player at the Open this year to shoot a 62. But that was remarkable. It felt right that he was the winner. Now, Cam Young, like you said, had a brilliant final round. Scotty Scheffler made a push until right at the end when he bogeyed, dropped back to 7 under. And at one point, Kim was the outright lead at 10 under. That was about 20 past 4 in the afternoon. It was quite late in the day. But I just ended like, and everyone, like, that. Just the way that he approached that winning putt, Yeah. I just can't get over it. I just can't get over how confident and decisive he was. And afterwards, he was on the phone to his family. He's like, I can't believe I was able to hold the club at all because I was shaking so much.
But it's a lesson in decision making as well, because he made his decision early on. It's like we talk about penalties. Pick a spot and put it in that spot. He picked a spot early and then he just took it. He knew, he didn't waver from it. He knew where it was going. And what's the difference between taking 22 seconds and taking 40 seconds if you're going to put it in the same place?
This is irrelevant, and you have made the correct point that this is a style of play anyway, Ryan Fassett, he's fast. Mm-hmm. But say, if he had missed that putt and it went to a playoff, do you think then people would say, well, he rushed it?
They probably would say that, but then the argument could be made that, and Dermot Kinnan's making that argument as well, that Cam Young made a bogey on his final hole. And his fatal mistake was he went into the bunker as well, and he went for it, and he caught the lip of it, and it bounces way out right, and then he gets in for his bogey. Whereas if he had taken the smart decision there and played a little bit more defensively or pragmatically, he could have got in for a par and won the tournament or got the playoff. So you know, there's fine margins in golf. There was also a moment where you know Scottie Scheffler. He's well in his competition, and then he goes way left at the start into the rough, and then he hits a shot so bad that the on-course commentary said that that's the most offline shot she's ever seen. And he is telling the stewards not to bother look for the ball because it's gone into the stand. So like, this is major golf. This is what happens when you're under pressure. So
totally.
I think he made the right call just sticking to his guns. If he changed his style of play to suit the major moment, then he may have missed.
I just loved it, Sarah. I just loved it so much. It was randomly, lads, my favourite golf shot, right? I remember this anyway, but I just looked it up to make sure when it was. It was the 2009 PGA Championship. 2009, right? Y.E. Yang of South Korea beat Tiger Woods. I think this is just before the Tiger Woods scandal. So he's like right at the end
Which
of his
scandal?
The first one.
we roll on.
And Yang, I remember this vividly. Like I just looked back, was like, when was that? 2009. He has a shot on the 18th, I think. And it seems like there's this massive tree right in front of him. And he shoots it over the tree. And it was just the most courageous, ballsy shot I've ever seen in golf for him to win his first major. And it felt like this, Ryan Fox. I know he plays fast. I know that's his rhythm anyway.
Yeah.
But this is the Open Championship. He's about to win this. I read out his record in majors before that. He was next nor near to a major championship. He's nearly 40.
56 in the world, right?
When he was on Friday night going to Saturday morning, like he was way, way off the lead. He was like tied 56. No one's ever come back from that to win it. Then his 62 he shoots on Saturday is amazing. But just the way he teed off on the 18th, his iron shot on the fairway in the second shot on the 18th, and then the putt. I was sure that was going to a playoff. I thought he'd par that putt and Cameron Young would be there waiting. And there was a shot of Cameron Young when he's driving in the practice range and he hears the roar, just puts the head down, puts the club back in.
So maybe Mayo do have a chance.
2.5 hours, I think he was waiting. Jesus, was Cam Young after his round. So I think we're all in favour of Ryan Fox being...
Yeah. That's the biggest
great.
G you'll ever see. Yeah.
In the G, but we'll call it great this time.
Yeah, the biggest G.
So we'll put him into the top tier for winning the Open this weekend. I think that's fair enough. The story of the Open across the weekend, though, was Bryson DeChambeau after he was handed a two-shot penalty on day two of the tournament for interference with his ball lie. So the YouTuber was deemed to have trampled down his lie, giving him a more beneficial backswing. As his ball was buried in the fescue in the right-hand side of the fairway. And it did cause some mixed feelings across the golf world. It caused a delay in the tee time announcement for Friday night. So the tee times didn't come out until 10:45 at night, which obviously isn't helpful for players who are starting early in the morning. Mm-hmm. And Rory McIlroy was asked about the situation. And it's fair to say he didn't hold back on Bryson.
So I was watching it live. I was up in the players' lounge watching it with a few other players. And as soon as he made the step into the ball, we all sort of looked at each other and were like, that didn't seem right. And then when I heard that he was, you know, he was called in by the rules officials, I think it was pretty obvious for why. I think there's no doubt that he improved the line of his backswing. So, you know, and again, it's like, whether it was careless or whether it was intentional, I don't think it matters. Hopefully it was careless. But I think the two-shot penalty was justified for sure.
What do you think of the scenes after? Obviously, you guys were delayed getting your tea times as well because of it all going on.
Late night for everyone.
Yeah.
I won't pretend to be up here and defend Bryson. I'm not particularly fond of him. I think a lot of it's performative. I think a lot of it's for attention. And to hold the tournament hostage like that and have all of us, volunteers, players, everyone waiting on him to depart, I didn't feel like it was a great look.
Not particularly fond of him. That's the strongest insult you can give while you're on camera. But it's also the most cutting.
Yeah.
Not particularly fond of you.
To say that he's just performative in general. Like a lot of him is performative. A lot of it is for attention.
Well, we have seen...
Wow.
You saw the next day how performative he was.
Yeah.
Where on the 18th hole, he goes into the rough again and he does this little tiptoe thing into the rough in front of the... Like it is, it's all for show. Scotty Scheffler was asked about it as well on Friday night. And it was a weird one because he started off the comments by saying, I don't have a ton to say about it. And then he's like, he corrects himself. No, actually, I do have a ton to say, but I'm going to hold my fire because there's a tournament ongoing still. And then true to his word, he did actually talk about the situation then after he finished his round on Sunday. And some people might have thought that he was going to be critical of DeChambeau when he made those comments on Friday, but he's actually very complimentary of DeChambeau, saying that, you know, he's played with him in practice rounds and amateur golf and underage golf and all throughout his professional golf, and he is far from a cheater, is the words that Bryson... or the words that Scotty used to describe Bryson. So, look, whether by accident or on purpose, it was against the rules and Bryson got punished for it. The big question around it is, does this happen more often in golf to players that aren't always on camera like Bryson DeChambeau might be, who were caught on camera? John Rahm was similar a couple of years ago. His ball moved ever so slightly. It was on camera. Does that happen to golfers who aren't on camera all the time and they get away with it? So is there sort of one rule for the big players, one rule for the players who aren't always on camera? That's sort of the overall argument that's coming out. But Bryson didn't come out well over the weekend. He had a spat with Nick Faldo on day one about his strategy. Then he had the two-shot penalty, the argument with the officials, and then the tippy-toe, and then he had a dreadful round on Sunday. So
wasn't McIlroy asked about Bryson again if he was to play the Irish Open? What would he think? And McIlroy said that would be great.
Yeah, he said it would be great to come. And it does look like he might well be at Trump in Dunbeg this year. So we'll wait and see. But that was the Open Championship.
Yeah.
I think Bryson goes into the bad section from the weekend.
Oh, not this. Interesting.
Not this year.
So McIlroy finished 1-under for the tournament. He double bogeyed right at the end of his rounds to drop from -3 to -1. And Shane Lowry, 2-under, he finished a shot ahead of Rory McIlroy. But this is Lowry's back nine. I just want to read out his back nine yesterday, right? He bogeyed the 10th and the 11th. And then he had three pars in a row. And he had two bogeys in a row. Then he had an eagle on the 17th, which was amazing. And then he bogeyed the 18th.
Yeah, Shane had such a mixed bag round. He birdied out of the bunker at one stage, which was a phenomenal shot. Now he just couldn't get going. Like it was definitely up and down the whole way around. Rory's round was the most frustrating thing if you actually want him to do something in a tournament. Not far off the lead, and he gives himself so many opportunities to get birdies. Missed a good 4 to 5 easy birdie opportunities. Not super easy, but like makeable for a player of Rory McIlroy's standards, and he just can't make them. And that's just Rory's story half the time. In these majors.
What's left? Like, where's the cutoff point for Rory and Shane where they draw a line under the year? Like, how many more tournaments do we have left?
That's it for majors now.
That's it for majors. And Rory was also asked about the PGA Tour after the tournament ended and his future on the tour. And he doesn't seem super positive about it. He said he's not very enthused by it.
Right.
Was what he said. There's definitely a potential over the next couple of years that we only see Rory McIlroy in the majors.
Do you think his biggest opponent is not Bryson DeChambeau or the 10th or the 11th? It's like Rory McIlroy's head and motivation. Because I thought it would set him free, the Masters, last year. Now, it did in a way because he retained the Masters, which is a hell of a feat in itself. But what's Rory McIlroy left to do? Now, his new Masters thing will probably be win the Open again because he's only won it the once. That was when, 2014?
Is the British Open after the Masters like the Charity Shield? Like
No. I'd say the Open and Masters is neck and neck. Like, I mean, which one is Wimbledon? The Masters was the Holy Grail in 2025 when he won it.
Yeah.
And then to win it fairly handily this year in the way he went about his business. I just wonder what's next for him.
So is it a full reset is what I'm saying? 2027, maybe. You know, set new targets, or does the Masters take too much out of you?
Possibly.
Yeah. Loves the Ryder Cup. He loves the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, he has that to look forward to next year, to be fair to him. All right. And Shane Lowry on Sundays. What's going on with him?
Yeah.
Shane Lowry's not had a good season at all overall. So I thought, like, honestly, it was probably a positive weekend overall for Shane.
To finish two under par.
Yeah, given how he's been playing this year, that's true. He had a pretty good weekend.
All right, where are we off to?
I think we'll go to the rugby.
Yeah.
So yeah. Saturday morning, started off the weekend with a defeat to New Zealand for Ireland in Auckland. The Eden Park record continues for New Zealand. And look, it was a scoreline of 40-21 was slightly flattering to Ireland overall, you would say. Andy Farrell's side were full of errors throughout, handling errors, particularly letting them down. And I think the hardest thing to take from the weekend, Dara, is probably that New Zealand didn't really play particularly well either, but they still look like the most dominant side on the pitch by a country mile.
Yeah. Limerick, Spain, New Zealand.
I might be very harsh on the good performance from the weekend.
All the high performance units did really well this weekend, and he's like, nah.
Great weekend for New Zealand rugby with Ryan Fox, obviously he's a former player himself and his son of Grant Fox. Look, it's a tough one when you go down to Eden Park, no matter who you are. Yeah, New Zealand haven't lost there since 1994, so it's always a tall task. But yeah, I would struggle to be too critical of that performance, right, to be honest, with the injuries. And I'm not one, you'll know me, Cullum, I'm not one to bring up the ref too often on air. Like, I don't like to give a out about the ref. Yeah. But I thought the way Nick Berry went about reffing that game was strange, because he knows, he'll be aware that Ireland and New Zealand base a lot of their defensive game around contesting rucks and jackling and trying to poach and cause havoc at the breakdown. And he took it upon himself to ref it a certain way in which he didn't allow those contests to happen, which is fine. And all you can ask for is consistency from refs. But, you know, when you have a player like Tadhg Byrne on the pitch whose whole shtick really, amongst other things, but his main thing is poaching and being an absolute nuisance at the breakdown, and he was told repeatedly over and over again not to contest the breakdown. It's like, well, what's the point of me being here? Like,
yeah.
I know Quinny was on comms for that game, was going mad over it, him, a former jackler type of player himself. He was frustrated with it. I think it had a bit of impact on the game. But that being said, New Zealand were much the better team. I think they're looking really good under Dave Rennie. They look like a brand new team again after a couple of years of uncertainty of where they were after the 2023 World Cup. They look really good again. And they've seen young players coming through. Ruben Love and Cam Roygaard and the halfbacks look like one of the best partnerships in world rugby at the minute. They look so dangerous. And yeah, the options they're bringing through as well in the forward pack is scary. And they're missing a few players as well. We're missing plenty of players too. And, you know, we were struck hard at the start of the game with injuries as well. Farrelly had come on for Jimmy O'Brien and he was taken off, and Bundy came on for him.
Ringrose into the left.
Ringrose had to go on to the left wing then, and Bundy Aki at 13, which isn't really his natural position either. So we had our struggles, but I just thought they'd gotten themselves back into the game. It was 14-7 at one point, and then we make the decision in our own 22 to not set up an exit. Try and play out. McCluskey goes out the back, and I'm not sure if it was for Prendergast or for Jimmy O'Brien, but it went to neither.
With Hugh O'Keefe, wasn't it?
Sorry, it was Hugh O'Keefe at the back as well, yeah. Not too sure which one it was aiming for, but it went in between them. Will Jordan, you don't need to give him another.
It was very frustrating because Jack Cronin's try to half the deficit was exactly halfway into Luke Jacobson's sin bin.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, that could have possibly should have been upgraded.
Yeah, I thought it was extremely reckless and dangerous, and the only mitigation was James Ryan being in the way and nullifying his impact.
Do you agree
impact.
With that? That's a crazy
excuse for a mitigation. Like, so Luke Jacobson's intent was the exact same. If it wasn't for James Ryan,
he made no effort to move up his right arm.
That's bizarre. I think it should have been a red card.
Permanent red?
How 20 minute red, I would have said.
It's only South African lads get the permanent reds like these days. It's 20 minutes
red
for everyone
is
else.
More for something like egregious,
we
like
saw
violent,
in November last year in the France South Africa game. There was an out and out red card in that match for, was it Etzebeth? Evan Etzebeth.
Yeah, he's got a couple. I gouged someone there against Wales as well.
That's right.
Yeah, like I thought it probably should have been a 20-minute ride. Does it change the game? Probably not. Overall, there's a couple of decisions went against Ireland as well. The Quintepay, a knock-on in midfield there. Tyburn has to be through a massive gap in midfield. And
deliberate.
I don't know what the ref was seeing there. He said there was multiple players outside and that just wasn't the case. That was untrue. There was one player. But again, I don't want to go too much on about refereeing decisions because I thought New Zealand by far were the better team, a better game plan. They're opening up us a lot. They're causing us to kind of narrow in on defence a lot from their set pieces and they're finding the edge with ease. And they just looked a bit pacier than us. They looked a bit more lively. I thought even when we had opportunities to score, or even got into their 22, that we looked sloppy at times. Gibson Park had an uncharacteristic bad game. I thought even Hugo Keenan at times, overall a decent game, but that chance when he got into 22 and he had 2-on-1 with Balakun. If you were to pick two players from the Irish team to be in that situation to score a try, you'd want those two lads, you know, two former sevens players who understand how to use space like that. In fairness to him, he does get through the gap there, but Jody Barr tracks him down. He had an amazing game. Probably should have given it out to Balakun though, but yeah, overall, I wouldn't be too negative though, because like I say, going out to Eden Park against that New Zealand team, I don't think it's anything to be ashamed of. And there were some positives to take from that game. Joe McCarthy was pretty good. I thought Prendergast has taken a bit of flak. I thought he was very good at times. A couple of mistakes here and there, but I thought he was overall quite positive. And yeah, it's the end of a long season. Like,
yeah, it is. It is. The only thing is, do Ireland have this unfortunate habit of repeating mistakes? Kind of getting in their own head.
Yeah.
There's an example of Robert Balakun like dropping a really easy ball for a player of his quality for anyone at that level.
After taking the high ball.
Yeah, the high ball. And then the one we just talked about there is like Conan and Prendergast combination brings us up to 7 points, 7 points behind New Zealand. And then immediately we can see that really sloppy try.
Yeah.
And it's just a symbol of what they were doing. Andy Farrell talked about this afterwards. It was two big things, the handling errors, which were compounded by the repeated mistakes.
Yeah.
If they did something wrong, they did the same thing again.
Your restarts are more important, or just as important as scoring a try. You know, there's a kind of a cliche in rugby that you haven't scored a try until you clear the ball from the restart. And there is even, I can't remember if it was after one of our tries or if it was just for maybe just after halftime, but there's a penalty given away by Dan Sheen for offside just from the restart around the side of a ruck. And it's just like, just don't do that. Do you know what I mean? Just let them clear the ball. We'll get the ball back and we'll go again. But they get a penalty to go up the pitch and they continue their dominance. We had such little of the ball as well. I thought we were tiring ourselves out. We had some really good defensive sets throughout the game. But like as is any sport, defending takes more energy out of you than anything else. So yeah, I thought we shot ourselves in the foot a few times, but showed some good stuff at times. But it's, you know, it's tough when you're losing energy against the All Blacks team in Eden Park. Decisions aren't going your way. The referees reffing the game a certain way. Yeah, it's a really tall task.
So all of that considered, this team takes their break and they go back in with Andy Farrell.
Yeah.
Is this New Zealand team going to be in their heads because of the way they've suffocated them in Eden Park?
Yeah, like my concern is that we haven't beaten them in a while and we were getting to a point where it was a rivalry between the two after obviously the long... the history of them destroying us, and we'd kind of pulled that back and we were going tit for tat over the fixtures. But now it's gotten to the point where All Blacks are clearly the better team. There's a bit of a gap between us and the top two or three there. Getting that back, it's a good opportunity in November where you have to play South Africa, the best team in the world by some margin, I think, at the minute. That's a good chance to see where you're at in the grand scheme of things. It'd be good to see us to get some players back from injury, but I would be slightly worried about the gap between South Africa and New Zealand and even France at the minute, but it's a good time to be failing, I think. Do you know?
And last question. Do you think that the Lions and the amount of effort that's put into the Lions is actually negatively impacting the Irish setup?
Maybe short term. Not long term, I don't think. Like the first Lions game was on the 20th of June 2025, so it's caused us to have a very long season for some of those players. I wouldn't be too concerned long term though. No, I think it's a good experience overall.
All right. That's it for the inaugural Gabs method of the performance rankings.
It needs some work.
Off the Ball's performance rankings.
Off the Ball breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Off the
the Ball, GAA.
His career has spanned such a long period of time, you know, 14 seasons. He was this unbelievable scorer. And then on Jim's team, and that period, he became this playmaker.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.